Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
So OTB Football Saturday, thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. You can text us 53106. I'm sure you have plenty of opinions about Stephen Kenny, the Republic of Ireland during the week, and the fact that we're going to go into the World Cup qualifiers as third seeds. You can also watch us now streaming live as well on the Off The Ball social channels, for Periscope on Twitter at Off The Ball, on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it for iOS and Android. Joined by the former Republic of Ireland striker Stephen Elliott, the opposition analyst with Dundalk, Shane Keegan, and the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward. Lads, good afternoon. Chelsea, top of the league, Stephen. A 2-0 win over Newcastle. Federico Fernandez, an own goal, and then Tammy Abraham with the second. 71% possession, top of the league, and comfortable for Chelsea. They're beginning to gel under Lampard, I feel.
Yeah, I think the last few weeks, I think you're starting to see what Frank Lampard wanted to do at Chelsea. I think they're starting to play really well. They've got pace all over the team. We're just speaking off air there with the lads. Werner's a really good player. He's very direct and he causes a lot of problems for opposition teams. But I think Newcastle came into the game today with a strategy, kind of just kind of sit off Chelsea and try and soak up pressure and stay in the game. But Chelsea got an early enough goal and it was always going to go Chelsea's way. Looking at the game, Newcastle never really threatened them. They were missing Callum Wilson today, which was a big miss for them. They obviously had Joe Linton, who hasn't done much since he's gone to Newcastle. But now Chelsea are flying, and I'm sure Frank Lampard will be delighted sitting on top of the table. Obviously, there's games to be played now this weekend, but now that they're in a good spot at the minute.
And Kieran Clarke was on from the start for his first Premier League start of the season. Stephen, how did he get on?
He's done all right. He was having to defend for a lot of the game and kind of side to side shuffle across with the Newcastle defence. But he does okay, Kieran. He's a solid defender. He's 100%er, and he didn't do anything majorly wrong. But again, him and the defenders of Newcastle were up against it all game, and he done okay. He wasn't outstanding, but he won a lot of headers. But again, balls down the side. I think the whole Newcastle defence struggled at times. They tried to frustrate Chelsea, but Chelsea have quality all over the pitch now, and he moved the ball so well.
Shane and Johnny, hope you're well. What did you make of Chelsea's win? Seemed a lot quite easy, much easier than it has been the last few years from them up at St James's.
Yeah. Look, they were the better side. Look, it was a mixture of both. It was a mixture of Chelsea being good, but I think it was nearly more so how poor Newcastle were. It led me to jumping in and having a look at the league table with about 10 minutes left. I was looking to see, you know, how are Newcastle looking at the moment, because they had all the hallmarks today of a team who could be dragged into a relegation battle. But I suppose I didn't quite realise just how poorly the bottom three, bottom four had done. They're 7-8 points clear of that kind of area of the table yet. But I mean, you were talking about Kieran Clarke there, and you know, I suppose to emphasise how toothless they were without Callum Wilson, Kieran Clarke was the highest scoring Newcastle player on the pitch. They said there at one stage that's how short of goals they are at the moment, and they were awful again, you know, like, but Chelsea were very, very good. To me, I think Ziyech is a major addition to him. He looks a real player, so he does, and every game Mason Mount just seems to be getting better and better. To me, he looks like he's going to turn into a really, really terrific player.
Go on, Johnny, sorry.
Yeah, I think they're probably contenders, really, JD, because, you know, just Liverpool have so many injuries, and, you know, Man City with 12 points, Chelsea with 18. So a lot has to go wrong, even though they have two games in hand. A lot has to go wrong for them to sort of fall off. Like half an hour into that game today, Chelsea had 81% possession. And the commentator pointed out as well that 35 away wins versus 29 at home in the league this season. So I personally believe, and I think it's probably early days with this, I think home advantage isn't worth anything really anymore. Certainly at the top level, if you're playing on a good pitch and the temperature is, you know, if you're not playing up in the sky or whatever. And that game, you know, Newcastle, as they were pointing out on the commentaries, Newcastle are kind of missing their fans for those home games. But it was one of these early kickoffs that was wasn't particularly entertaining. And I suppose we will talk about this, the lifespan of football and sport behind closed doors, because I think the novelty, such as it is kind of wearing off. But Chelsea were good. They maybe at 1-0, they kind of looked a small bit vulnerable, and Newcastle really, really came out of their shell. Kieran Clarke was an interesting one, because I think we have serious issues really with Duffy at centre-back at the moment. I think the Irish team will probably be looking to, you know, what are our options? Because we definitely we have a lot of issues, as we'll talk about, but centre back is probably one of them, and Clark playing was definitely encouraging, but it was very forgettable, really. We had a chat off air about it, and it was pretty brief, which was understandable. But they're contenders. I think Leicester are potential contenders. That game's going to be massive, this Liverpool game, and so we'll see. It's a fascinating Premier League race, albeit with nobody at the games.
Okay, guys, let's get to the real issue here. The Republic of Ireland. Good day for Chelsea fans. Hope they enjoy the rest of the day. On the matter of, I'm just going to give my take on that, then you can take it away, guys. On the matter of this non-story, you're right, I see it around the motivational video and speech Stephen Kenny presented to the squad before the England game. I wrote this in my column for OTB Sports yesterday morning. You can check it out on the app. This is a bunch of BS for me, right? All this is very simple. Stephen Kenny deserves his chance at a full qualifying campaign. Brian Kerr got a chance. Steve Staunton, who struggled, got a chance. Mick McCarthy got three chances before they qualified for the World Cup in 2002. It's about fairness. And whatever people think of Stephen Kenny, he deserves a shot if he's the manager at a full campaign. It's a results business. The results have not been good. You can say there's a lot of mitigating factors to that. COVID, injuries, the fact that we're living in a pandemic. It's not been easy, but our best performance was the most important game, which was Slovakia. We were unlucky. We deserve a reset in society. Generally, he deserves a reset from next March. I hope that the players get behind him. I hope that we'll hear from players publicly. I'd hope to hear from Damien Duff, Keith Andrews, Seamus Coleman, James McCarthy, that we'll all get behind the manager because he deserves the campaign if he's the manager. Look, I'm seeing at the back of the mail here today, Kenny grilled by FAI as player doubts emerge. A number of senior Republic of Ireland players unconvinced about the direction Stephen Kenny is taking the team. I'm seeing the back of the Star here, unrest growing among senior players over his style. Like, once again, should we be seeing that kind of stuff in the press? It's not the fact that Stephen Kenny shouldn't be criticised. We haven't scored a goal in seven, but surely he deserves a chance at a campaign like all previous managers have got. Stephen, you want to start off on this, your view?
Yeah, listen, I suppose you look at the games, the bar the Slovakia game, I know the Nations League game, but they're kind of friendly, so to speak. And yet all this stuff coming out, the motivational video and stuff, whether it should have come out or not. But the thing for me is, whoever's leaked that this story, I know obviously one person, I presume, has leaked this story, but the fact that he's leaked this, he feels confident enough to leak this that he thinks he's not going to be seen as an outcast in the group, for me. So I would be surprised if it's just one person who may have been upset with this, whether it was the video or the speech by Stephen, I'm not sure. But again, for the fact that it's been let out, I would guess that it's more than just one individual that's upset. And again, we don't know the full details of this video speech or whatever it is, but everybody's kind of read the rumors what it is and what a so-called is. But again, yeah, listen, Stephen, does he need a chance? He does need a chance, but on the same token, that you got to look at the results and you got to say, if he is to kind of go forward, I think he has to take a little bit out of the last eight games and learn from it. And we all want to play this new style. And listen, he's had COVID and the problems that with players coming out of the squad, especially in the game in the last game, where he kind of had a depleted squad. But again, I still think he's got to learn from it. Like, I got to go back to the England game as well. Like, we want to play this style. Stephen wants to play this style, and I think I know Johnny mentioned Shane Duffy there. I think if we're going forward, if we're going to continue with Stephen's so-called style, then Shane Duffy doesn't play in the team for me, because ultimately when he's on the ball, he's a liability to Ireland, because he's not good on the football. Let's be honest. When it comes to playing defenders playing from the back, he wouldn't be somebody where you'd look at him and go, do you know, he's a really good footballer. He got Player of the Year for Ireland 2 years on the trot, 17 and 18. That probably tells you a little bit how he played. He soaked up pressure. People would say it was kind of a little bit, wasn't great to watch. But again, that was the way he played, and that's how he was successful, clearing balls, heading balls. The way Stephen's playing now, I think he causes more problems for the team, Shane Duffy. So again, he made him captain the other night. He's an experienced player. For me, I think Stephen Kenny's got to look at the squad and maybe be a little bit more flexible with how he wants to play. We all want to play, but again, we're 3-0 down to England, and he's encouraging Darren Randolph to pass the ball to Shane Duffy on the edge of his own box. For me, that was ludicrous watching the game. I know I'm only going back to one game, but I think he's got to analyse over the next few months, Stephen Kenny, and see, we want to play the style, but can we do it, maybe mix it up a little bit more? I don't know, like, I know in the 21s, Steve, it was great. I enjoyed watching the 21s football, and that's exactly what the 21s is. The results aren't really important. It's about developing players. It's a stepping stone for getting into that international. I don't know whether Stephen has kind of, he's got this philosophy. Now, he did say a lot, saying he's going to come in and change the way Ireland are playing, and he is trying that, to be fair to him. I'm not saying we need to get rid of Stephen Kenny, but I think you've got to realise that international football at senior level, I don't think it should be a kind of stepping stone for like players to kind of go in there and like just kind of tap around and get used to playing in the senior team. I think there's got to be a good balance there where you've got to look at the results, because ultimately it is results. Everybody looking in, results, bad results build a lot of pressure on management teams and managers and groups. And I think, listen, one goal in eight games, and it's, no matter what you look at the games and how he went, it's nowhere near good enough. And again, I'm sure Stephen is going to be given the time, and he does deserve the time. Like John mentioned there, he deserves the qualifying campaign. But I'd like to think that he has learned a little bit out of these next eight games. And again, going back to the incident, I'd be surprised if it's just one individual that kind of, whether it's one of these things, people, somebody to feel confident enough to kind of let this loose tells me that maybe just more than one individual that isn't totally happy with things. But we'll see.
Shane, what's your view?
Yeah, no, I'm with you, JD. A non-story is probably exactly how I would put it. And to me, it is a non-story because, like, okay, I would disagree with people who are looking for Stephen to be under pressure already because of results. But at least you can see where they're coming from. Whereas, I mean, for anybody to think that Stephen should lose his job over, you know, what went on with this video is just absolutely ludicrous to me. Absolutely ludicrous. It is disappointing that we even know about it. That's for sure. It's very, very disappointing that we even know about it. And there will be repercussions, but personally, myself, and look, you know, I do have to preempt everything, but, you know, I am obviously kind of pro-Stephen, but I would like to think if there's going to be repercussions here, the repercussions are going to be for the person who got it outside of the camp rather than for Stephen, to be perfectly honest.
Just letting you know that Ireland are 12-0 down to England in the rugby.
Only 9-0 compared to the football, but there you go.
Yeah.
I don't know, JD. I think you pretty much summed it up quite well there. There are a lot of issues here. First of all, I think if Ireland were doing well, this would be laughed at. You know, and it wouldn't be an issue instead of issues surfacing on the back page of tabloids today. First of all, the FAI's response that it was going to launch an investigation as a matter of urgency was kind of like throwing a hell of a lot of petrol over a tiny little fire, really, because there was absolutely no need for that. And the FAI's reaction to this publicly, I think, was a bit of a disgrace, to be honest. And I'd really hope that there was a bit of soul searching and questions being asked. And I don't want to go back to the era of a particular person who was involved, but you know, this matter of urgency over something that we all agree was a bit of a non-story, really. To me, the FAI has serious questions to answer. Secondly, whoever leaked this, and you're essentially leaking next to nothing as far as I can see, but whoever leaked it, be it a player, part of the management team, or whoever leaked it, I don't know, he should be gone. To my mind, should be absolutely gone. You absolutely do not bring the squad down by something that you have an apparent problem with. You talk to the manager if you have a problem. You don't go to the press.
The English press as well. The English press, because the Times, a distinguished newspaper, the next day saying that Stephen Kenny's position is under serious threat, and you've got a Tory MP then coming out and having a go. I don't believe he saw the video. Nobody seems to have seen the video. And from if you like believe most of the accounts, it was tame.
Yeah, I've sort of spoken to people who've spoken to people. For example, I haven't spoken to anyone in the management team. I haven't spoken to any of the players. Everything I've heard back was that it wasn't an issue. The players didn't have an issue with it. You know, the Daily Mail has kind of been at the centre of it. This is the Daily Mail that, was it last week, wrote a story about all the houses that Marcus Rashford had invested in. As if Marcus Rashford isn't entitled to own property after doing more for sort of working class poor kids in Britain than probably any politician has done in years, really, this year. Yet the Daily Mail, in its kind of arrogance and classist way of looking at life, decided to take on Marcus Rashford because he was investing in properties in this kind of snide way there recently. So anyone who's taken the Daily Mail seriously shouldn't be. But I suppose against all of that, JD, Stephen Kenny now is under pressure because he goes into a long winter. November can be a tough month. But in the middle of November, he goes into this long period without any games. I understand he's taken this quite badly. I think one of the positives for me about his reign in terms of dealing with a set of, let's be honest, horrendous, non-goal scoring performances at the very least. One of the positives has been that he's been good with the press and he's been realistic. You know, he batted off, we spoke about it last week, he batted off questions about Doherty and the embarrassing comments, which was probably a bit over the top about the England game. But I think this will hit him hard, and 100% he'll have to deal with questions in the media about the need for this video, the reaction of the players, who's out to get him, why are they out to get him, are the players lacking confidence? And that's just coming from me over the course of the last 10 seconds. If you put 20 journalists in a room or a Zoom room, he now will have to face questions because otherwise journalists aren't doing their job. And Stephen Kenny has gone from a situation of managing underage teams and managing Dunfermline, managing the Dock, managing Shamrock Rovers, managing Longford Town, managing Derry City, managing Bohemians. This is nothing compared to the Ireland job. And going in on the back of one goal in eight games, this young coaching team, none of them really proven in terms of the task at hand. They have an awful lot of pressure on themselves, whether they like it or not. And I think after the last couple of days, they do have that pressure on themselves. So it was a sorry state of affairs because I think you can pick good points in nearly all of our performances. After five games, I was very happy. I thought the last game was deeply disappointing. But what concerns me more now is how Kenny will react and how this coaching staff will react because this was a sorry state of affairs.
Okay, 53106, getting some text messages in on this, and listeners get involved or add off the ball on Twitter with your views. Is the bigger issue with the motivational video not that he used up the tactic on a friendly? That he used on a friendly rather than competitive game. It smacks of panic. I think he's a dead man walking. That is from Aaron. On the other hand, agree, Kenny deserves a chance. Until proven goal scorer appears, he needs to modify his approach to protect a suspect back four. But I think the role of Damien Duff, Keith Andrews, Stephen is important. These are like Damien Duff's a Premier League winner, played under Jose Mourinho. Keith Andrews was a forthright figure when he played for the national team. Is there a worry that the dressing room gets a little bit fractured? How do dressing rooms react when things are not going well? And how can a dressing room come back into a situation where they're all behind the manager and everybody's on the same hymn sheet? Presumably, it's only one thing as results.
Yeah, well, listen, see that motivational video. For me, showing a video of or it was Irish goals or a bit of Irish history, it's not really a major issue, is it, really? Who cares about that? But it's the fact that I would look at that and just think it's the fact that video, he felt that video was needed to motivate lads for going to play England in the game at Wembley. Like, I think if you're in that Ireland squad, I think you're motivated anyway. You're playing at Wembley. I don't think you should need a motivational video of our history to get yourself up for a game against England. Like, that's that. But anyway, that's besides the point. But I think the management team, I wouldn't mind listening to maybe Keith Andrews or Damien Duff coming out and having a say on the matter and kind of backing the manager if that's the case. You know what I mean? Like, I know people say, well, they're the assistants. Well, I know a previous assistant I used to like to speak a lot about when he was involved in the national team. So I would be interested to see what they have to say on the point. And as I get, like, because again, maybe Stephen Kenny needs somebody else, because again, sometimes you listen to him speak, everybody knows what he wants to do. He wants to get us playing his football. He wants to integrate young lads. And that's great, I says, but you've got to get the balance right, which I've already mentioned. But I wouldn't mind somebody else maybe coming out, whether that's a senior player or assistant manager or one of the coaches, to say, no, we're all in this together. And we've not seen that yet. It's always been Stephen speaking. And again, sometimes he does, like, this will be all new to him, all this kind of pressure, because obviously he's been in the League of Ireland for the best part of 10 years. He was the main man, the main manager, winning all the trophies. And basically, I'm not saying he had it easy from the media, but it was quite straightforward. Win another trophy. What's your secret? How did you get them playing? Everybody was wanting him to do well. And even now, he's coming in, everybody wants him to do well at Ireland. Like we all do, we want Ireland to be playing well. But I just think this is all new territory for him, and he'll have to learn from this over the next few months. And if anything, he can get stronger from it. And I do hope it'll be a learning curve for him, no doubt. And maybe it's one of them when he comes in and he says he's going to change all the style of football. maybe he shouldn't have been a little bit more kind of outright with what he was saying. Sometimes you think, maybe sometimes just stay, like, he had a role anyway. Maybe we knew he was going to be senior manager. Maybe he didn't need to say he was going to do us so quick and this, that, and the other, because maybe other people in the game may have disrespected previous regimes a little bit. I don't know what other managers think about when he comes out and says this. So I don't know. I just think it's a learning curve, if anything. Listen, I don't think he's going to get sacked. Why would you sack a manager after a few friendly games? It's one of them. He's got to be given the World Cup. But again, he's got to change results. For me, if he continues playing like this, which we want to do, then I don't think we have the players at the minute in that senior international squad to play the way he's hoping to play. And that's something he has to realise. And it's often saying we've got good young players coming through. But listen, experience is only gained by experience. I'm aware of that. But again, I still think you need to have a little bit more. You need senior players in your international squad, and I don't think you're going to be able to just come in and flick a switch and change everything. I think he has to realise that now. He has to get that balance right, and in time, maybe we will see that kind of development of our play. But again, at the moment, results aren't good, and he needs to look at everything, I think, over these next few months and kind of just evaluate where he is with the squad and who he wants to be playing. I go back to Duffy again. Like, for me, he should be playing. From my opinion, Duffy should be playing for Ireland, so he's one of our leaders. He has to play. So the fact that he's playing, then he's got to look at a little bit, maybe changing her up, but just giving him the ball all the time, because teams are just going to let him have the ball. I can guarantee you. That's why Brighton got rid of Duffy, because they want to play up in the back, and their manager recognised he isn't able to do it. He's at Celtic now, and he's struggling. It's no major coincidence, because when you're playing up in Scotland, Celtic have all the ball, like. So that's maybe why he's struggling, because teams against Celtic, when they do break, they have to break, and his pace gets caught out when he has time on the ball. I don't see Duffy fitting into this system, and for me, Duffy has to play. So I think we have to get that balance right, not just with Duffy, but with other players. And again, that's something that only Stephen can look at, and he can only fix him and the coaching staff.
Okay, got to take a break, guys. Back with more Republic of Ireland talk after the break. 5-3-1-0-6 for your text messages. We got an update from the Aston Villa against Brighton game. This is in the Premier League. Tom Gale.
Aston Villa 0, Brighton 1. Danny Welbeck with his first goal for Graham Potter. A lovely dink to finish off a run, which he started himself on the halfway line. But before that, Ross Barkley's first kick of the game, whipping in a low free kick from the left, immediately clutching his thigh, does the rotating fingers to the bench, saying his hamstring is gone and he is done for the afternoon. It's Aston Villa 0, Brighton 1.
Just O'Connor Harahan on the bench there for Villa, and Jason Malumbi and Aaron Connolly on the bench for Brighton. I'm going to check in with Shane Dowling at the Porky Quay for Waterford and Clare in the hurling. Galway have knocked Tipperary out of the hurling championship, and England lead Ireland 12-0 at Twickenham. Back after this.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through the 5 o'clock. Latest on the rugby, England 12, Ireland 0 at Twickenham, coming up to half time. Galway are through to play Limerick in the semi-finals of the All-Ireland Hurling Championship. 3:23 for the Tribesmen, 2:24 for Tipperary, who were knocked out, the champions from last year, beaten at the Gaelic Grounds by 2 points. Waterford and Clare starting very shortly at Porky Quay. Shane Dowling, how are you and how does it look?
John, you're very welcome here to Porky Quay. Only for today reads the 21st of November 2020. You think it's a summer's day. It's the first time I've been at a game this year where there's no wind and there's no rain. The pitch looks absolutely impeccable and both teams are ready to go, and we're just about 3 minutes from throwing. What's interesting to see, John, is there'll be much talk about, and especially John Kiley last week, saying that only 40 people from both teams and management are being allowed into the stadium. I look to my left, I see Paddy O'Mahony, Waterford Sharptrooper on crutches. He's inside with the Galway setup. And I look to my right and I see John Conlon, also on the way back from a cruciate. He's getting involved in the Clare warm up, even though not tagged out. Conditions here, John, are absolutely on the money and both teams are ready to go.
Okay, Tony Kelly, 145 in the championship so far. Shane, how do Waterford stop him?
I think it's very simple. I think Liam Cahill and his management team, they need to identify one person through a man-marking job. I think a lot of insult has been thrown to Clare players where people are saying, even myself included, that if you shut down Tony Kelly, Clare aren't going to win the game. But I think if Waterford do shut down Tony Kelly, I do think Clare are going to struggle. But for me, they need to get someone, they need to identify someone and put him on him from the very, very start and hope that they can curtail his influence on the game today.
if Clare are going to win it, who else needs to step up? David McInerney, Aaron Shanahan, both named on the bench.
Yeah, so three changes. I was coming to that, John. David McInerney, Jack Brown and Aaron Shanahan, they're all being included into the Clare team.
Oh.
Stephen O'Halloran, David Reedy and Colin Guilfoyle, they make way. So I know Brian Lowen did something similar a couple of weeks ago, or last week even, where he named a couple of late changes. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see. But they are three late changes on the Clare team. But I think there are other forwards outside of Tony, the likes of Shane O'Donnell, the likes of Cahal Malone, you know, and indeed Aaron Shanahan, who's well able to get a goal, they need to step up big time today if they're to get over this hard-working, fighting Waterford side.
Yeah, and Tadhg Dabirka providing the platform and defence for that, Shane. Stephen Bennett's been doing well in attack. How are you calling it?
I would think it's fairly straightforward. I thought Waterford were immense against Limerick last week. I know it was only 6 days ago. If they can bring the same work rate and the same intensity and close down that Clare half forward line of midfielders early on, I think they're going to win the game.
All right, Shane Downing, we'll have more updates from Páirc Uí Chaoimh, Waterford and Clare throughout the first and second halves between now and 5 o'clock. Just back to our football chat with Stephen Elliott, the former Republic of Ireland striker, Johnny Ward, the broadcaster and the journalist and the opposition analyst with Dundalk, Shane Keegan. Thanks to Paddy Power. For more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. We'll continue our discussion about the Republic of Ireland because it is quite a hot topic with Stephen Kenny. Under a bit of pressure, no wins in 8, no goals in 7. When I was looking the other night, I was impressed by Darragh O'Shea, by Jason Knight, and Stewie Byrne, I thought, was making a legitimate point, lads, that the substitutions were possibly a bit late. And this goes back to your point, I think, Stephen Elliott, that if Shane Duffy is not playing well, should he be in the team? If Conor Harran, for example, is not getting first-team football, which he's not, should he be in the team? I think agility is really important, guys, when it comes to if a player like Jason Knight is performing well for his club, if he's doing well, should he not be in the team? And should we now need to just move forward with the players that are in form? Like Brian Cody, to use a hurling expression, Johnny, always picks on form.
Yeah, I fundamentally disagree with Sleeves on the Duffy issue. Duffy has been arguably our worst player basically throughout this 8 games. I think he's been an absolute liability at times. He's had a very tough year with his father passing away, and I'm not sure if that's carried into his performances, and it's perfectly explicable if it has. And he came out, I forget which game it was, was the Slovakia game, or the Bulgaria game rather. He came out and kind of spoke about his performance. But he's been worse than that since, so it has played on his mind. Richard Dunn had a very interesting article in The Independent yesterday where he spoke about how deep this team is. And this is something Gary Breen brought up in the show, it must be about a year ago at this stage, talking about how deep Duffy plays. Conversely, if Duffy plays high, that makes us kind of vulnerable. So if Duffy and our centre-backs are going to play deep, we can't really play a pressing game. And the gap between midfield and defence is going to be too much. And it's going to completely destroy the system. You mentioned there, JD, you mentioned Knight, Darragh O'Shea, Malumbi. I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head. I think Darragh O'Shea is going to be absolutely outstanding. I think he's one of our best prospects. Jason Knight is showing little flashes for a kid that I think is really encouraging. What he's already done for Derby at his age is quite startling. Not to mention that Troy Parrott has just not been able to get going this season at all because of injury, and I think he will come into his own yet. And then you bring in Ida and Connolly into the argument and all that, and all these are all players that basically are essentially a blank canvas at this stage. So there are lots of positives, but if we don't play Duffy, and you're on about Horahan, who I still have a lot of time for, we do need leaders, and we need leaders in the team, because this is a team that is probably lacking confidence at the moment, and I'm not exactly sure where they are. So Kenny has this really, really interesting challenge, and Shane can probably speak about this, where you were really keen to bring in young players and let them develop. But that time is kind of gone now, because we're straight into the real stuff. And do you trust your senior players, some of whom, like Duffy, are totally out of sorts as far as I'm concerned? Or do you basically ditch them and start trusting your younger players like Darragh O'Shea, which would probably be my angle, but it's not an easy one.
So you have me confused, Johnny. So for our next important game, you would or wouldn't pick Duffy?
I wouldn't play him, no.
Who would you pick?
I'd probably play the best two centre backs available, which at the moment I don't know who that is. Duffy wouldn't be one of them.
Duffy, like to me, it's very, very easy. You hear this, you know, it's very, very easy to say who's not good enough. It's much tougher to say who is good enough. I agree.
I'd have no problem playing Darragh O'Shea.
I thought Darragh O'Shea was excellent the other night, and I thought it proved the point that at this stage of his career, Darragh O'Shea would be best served for Ireland in a full-back role. To me, I think he's maybe not ready yet to go in a centre back role. I thought he was very good the other night, as you say.
Would you play Duffy the next game then?
I would. Yeah.
So then we can't really. He can't have the ball. He just cannot have the ball.
But that's my point there, Joey. Yeah. I'm saying, listen, I think Duffy should play. I think he's our leader. Right? I agree with you. He's been poor, right? And since Stephen Kenny's gone in, okay, we can talk about stuff off the field that have happened with him, and it probably has affected him. But that's what my point is. As the manager, you go in. If you're still going to play with this guy, make him captain the other night, then you have to get the balance right. You can't just flick a switch and say, Duffy, you have to play. Shane, you have to play like this. Get her. Like, are you telling me Shane Duffy wanted the ball off Randolph at Wembley in the England game and the 3-0 down 50-odd minutes on the clock? He doesn't want the ball there. So sometimes, and it's not... You got if you want to insist with insist on playing these lads. Who for me, Duffy has to play. He's been a leader. Listen, you can talk about his bad spell, but defensively, you can't knock him over the course of a prolonged period. So he has that experience. So I don't think you can turn around and just say, "No, Shane Duffy, you're not playing. I'm going to bring in two young lads," because we don't know how they're going to cope. So yeah, we might win the game, we might not. But is Stephen Kenny in a position where he can be bold enough to kind of do that?
I'm not on about bringing in young lads necessarily. We've Long, we've Egan, we've O'Shea, we even have potentially Clark. Duffy at the moment is a problem, not only on the ball, but defensively as well. He doesn't have confidence, full stop. And I even think in his forward play, he's not really attacking the ball with conviction at the moment. This is kind of preempting what happens with Celtic in the meantime. At the moment, Duffy 100%, I would not have him on the team because...
But Johnny, you're saying that, right? You're saying you wouldn't have Duffy, but he's been our main goal scorer. Like, do you know what I mean? He's one of our biggest threats. But that's
he wins the goal of the year competition.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. You can't just say I'm going to play. For me, Stephen Kenny, I play. If I'm the manager, I'm playing Shane Duffy. But I'm probably being a little bit more flexible how I want to play and maybe working on things. I'm not. Listen, we're talking about a guy that's had Stephen Kenny, who's had his squad absolutely depleted. COVID, it's been tough.
14 players.
Yeah, and he hasn't had much time to kind of go and work at this. But my point is like, if he wants, if he's bold enough and say, listen, I'm going to continue playing this, then I agree, don't play Duffy. But I think it'd be a mistake. I think going forward, I think he's got to find a happy medium somewhere with the way we were seen to be playing beforehand and then this supposedly new way he wants to play. I think he needs to find a little balance because I think Shane Duffy is a huge leader and I think a lot of lads in the squad are going to respect him massively. And I just think it's one of them where I think the manager... That's what I'm saying. I'm hoping he's learned that. Listen, I might be totally wrong, and Stephen Kenny might be thinking, you know what, I'm not going to play him. But the fact that he made him captain, and he could, if he felt that way, he could have took him out the other night and played Kieran Clark. He was there, you know. So for me, I think there's got to be a lot of reflection by Stephen Kenny over these next few months, I think.
Yeah, and we just got to take a break here, guys. We've got to come back after the news. Just let you know that it's England 12, Ireland 0 at halftime in the rugby in Twickenham in this Nations Cup match. Johnny May with two tries, Owen Farrell with one conversion. Ireland yet to get themselves on the scoreboard. Just some text in here. Lads, in seven competitive games, Kenny's record is 4 draws and 3 1-0 losses. And with better finishing, we'd be looking at wins instead of draws and draws instead of losses. We're not all that far away from getting results. We just need a striker, attacking midfielder to finish the chances we're creating. Kenny's got to be given a full campaign, no question about it. That is from Dinny. He might have been better off showing them 101 great goals, says Dave and Bray. And we'll speak to Stephen Elliott about our lack of goal-scoring prowess at the moment. In the Republic of Ireland situation. Just to give you some scores from the Premier League and from the Championship. Newcastle United 0, Chelsea 2. That was a full-time score from earlier on. So Chelsea on top of the table. Federico Fernandez with an own goal and then Tammy Abraham scoring in the second half. It is Aston Villa 0, Brighton 1. That's a half-time score. And in the Championship full-time, Bournemouth 4, Reading 2. Half-times as well coming in as well. A goalless in all of these matches. Barnsley, Nottingham Forest, Bristol City, Derby County, Luton Town 0, Blackburn Rovers 0 and goalless as well between Middlesbrough and Norwich. It is Millwall 1, Cardiff City 0, it's Preston 0, Sheffield Wednesday 0, it's QPR 0, Watford 1, it's Stoke City 3, Huddersfield Town 2, Swansea City also leading in the Championship by 1-0 against Rotherham United and Wycombe Wanderers 0, Brentford 0. Earlier on in the hurling, Galway 3-23. Tipperary 2.24 the Gaelic Grounds. So Galway winning by 2 points in the John McDonagh Cup full times. Meath 1.19, Westmeath 2.20, and Kerry 2.22, Carlow 1.23. So lots to discuss about the Republic of Ireland, Liverpool, Leicester tomorrow, Leeds, Arsenal, and Spurs, Man City later on. 5.3.106. Back with Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk after the news.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. England leading Ireland in the rugby by 12-0. Second half just underway at Twickenham. And Galway knocking Tipperary out of the hurling championship earlier, 3.23-2.24 the Gaelic Grounds. What is going on at Páirc Uí Chaoimh? Waterford against Clare. Shane Dowling.
John, there's 12 minutes gone here and it's absolutely crazy, right? Waterford are 2-3, Clare 4 points. But that's only a snippet of what's happening here. Inside 2 minutes, former professional soccer player Desi Hutchison stuck the ball in the back of the net. A couple of minutes later, another ball came in. Desi, second goal. Just after that, Tony Kelly went down injured directly underneath us in front of the stand. And I can see in the television screen here in front of me, he looked under serious pressure. I was really worried for a minute that it was his knee. Then I saw it was ankle. There was absolutely consternation going down the sideline. Eventually, Tony Kelly got heavily strapped and he's back onto the field. He's got 2 points of Clare's four. He's got a point from play and he's also got a free. Stephen Benefit from Waterford, he's got 2 frees. But only for the Clare goalie, Aver Quilligan, he would have got another goal. So early on, the Clare defence has been completely opened up and exposed. Waterford have got 2 goals. They've had another chance and there was a huge scare from Clare. And if Tony Kelly was to stay off the field there, John, you could have nearly argued it was going to be game over. But he's back on. It's a 6-point game. But Waterford are definitely the more paused early on.
Okay, thanks Shane. Back to Shane Dowling and Páirc Uí Chaoimh shortly. Text in here on 53106 about football. We're talking to the former Republic of Ireland striker Stephen Elliott, the broadcaster and journalist Johnny Ward, and the opposition analyst with Dundalk Shane Keegan this afternoon. Our football coverage brought to you by Paddy Power. With more information on responsible gambling, visit dunlewy.net. You can text us on 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. You can also watch us on the social channels now for Periscope on Twitter, at Off the Ball on YouTube, on Facebook, and on the new OTB Sports app, that great new app. Download that now for iOS and Android if you haven't got your eyes on it yet. Lads, Johnny is right. This is one of our textures. The key story here is who the leaker is, and they need to get rid of the leaker. Alex Ferguson always had a policy of getting rid of such characters. Hopefully Kenny can come out stronger out of this. Duffy reminds me of Pat Bonner when the back pass rule came in. That is from Alan. Okay. If you want to play a pressing
game... doesn't want that comparison, but yeah.
If you want to play a pressing game, you can play Duffy from another texture. Another texture. Hi, lads. Great discussion as always in all sports. Thank you from Joe. Egan and Long, the centre-halves for the next game. O'Shea, Coleman and Doherty for choice of full-backs. And speaking of Shane Duffy, he's on the bench today. Somebody was texting, give us the Celtic score. Of course we will. We're just very struck on times here sometimes. So it's Hibernian nil, Celtic nil at half-time. And Shane Duffy on the bench for Celtic today. If we're going to get results, I think, going forward, Stephen Elliott, we got to get goals. You were a striker for the international team. Where are the goals going to come from in the future?
I think you look at Connolly. For me, Connolly's the one that, I know he's not scoring loads of goals at Bryan, but every time he plays, I always think he has that little bit of extra zip about him when he's played for the senior team. I think Adam Ida, listen, I watched him play for the 21s and I was impressed with him playing for the 21s, but I'll be honest with you, in the games he's played for Ireland, I don't think he's quite ready yet to be kind of Ireland's number nine. I watch him closely, he does all right, but I still think there's lads in the squad that probably should have been playing ahead of him in the lineup. Not saying he would have scored loads of goals, but I think he probably would have given a little bit more of a better platform up there with their starting positions and movements. Troy Parra, you're looking at him. There's a lot of talk about Troy Parra, but I still think we need to be a little bit careful. I got a little bit excited about myself, like when he first was onto the scene. But I think we need to see Troy playing regularly, scoring goals, doing the business at club level before we can kind of start pushing him into the kind of automatic place up front. But we just need to. Again, there's a lot of work for Stephen Kenny to do to get this right. This is how we're going to play. It's a collective effort by the starting 11, whoever plays in the game, to create chances. I know you look at some of the games we've been unlucky, especially the Slovakia game. I think we probably should have scored some goals in that game. We were a little bit unlucky in that. More than that, there's been times where I think it's just been a little bit pedestrian moving the ball, and we haven't quite cut open teams. But it's a worry. I don't think we've had. everybody goes back to the Robbie Keane. He was a kind of talisman for years. He was an incredible player, world class when he was in his prime. But it's going to be difficult, and that's up to Stephen to find the right balance, to find that striker that is going to get us the goals. But for me, I don't think Adam Adar is quite. I know he's picked up an injury now. He's out for a while. But I think it was a little bit of a hard ask to kind of give him that number nine in all them games and expect him to kind of do the business. Maybe it was an investment for the future of international football. The experience of playing them games may help us in the long run when he does come back around. I'm not saying he's never going to be ready, but I just think at this moment in time, it was a little bit of an ask for him to be kind of given that role. And again, we go back to the manager. That's up to him and the management and the coaching staff he has around to analyse the players. They see them. They'll presumably watch them in their club teams. They'll see them training in the few days they have them there. They'll see who has the bit between their teeth. And it's just about finding that right. We have no automatic choice up there at the minute. And it is a worry. It's been a worry for before Stephen Kenny came into the helm. It was there with Mick and Martin when Robbie retired. So it's always going to be, until somebody starts scoring goals or the team starts scoring goals regularly, even spread out, then it's always going to be questions asked. And where they're going to come from, I don't know. I don't look at any player and think, yeah, there you go. Connolly, again, I mentioned earlier on, he's probably the one for me that I think if he gets one or two, he'll burst onto it because he has that pace and that directness. But other than that, I haven't seen anybody that I would say, yeah, this is the one.
It's now 15-0 to England at Twickenham. Tweet in here from Owen Doherty, fixation on Duffy. The problems are elsewhere. Kenny will get 2021. We will not be able to score unless these players, unless Parrott develops incredibly. New manager in 2022. You wanted to touch on Shane Duffy just before we move off this topic, Shane Keegan?
Yeah, well, no, I suppose just going back to what we were saying, like every player, JD, has their strengths and their weaknesses. And it's up to a manager to, as Sleeves has kind of said, to set up to accommodate that. I mean, the fact that Shane can't naturally play out from the back, I mean, there has been, you know, generations of fantastic centre halves who couldn't naturally play out from the back, but they can still be accommodated within a team. I mean, if you think of it from a very, very practical point of view, like if you look at you know, your Terry or Rio and Vidic and people like that, there's always kind of been a balance where one is more the ball playing centre half and the other is more the rugged defender centre half. And then what do you do in front of that? Very simple. If your ball playing centre half gets the ball, well, then you get everybody to make runs to clear space in front of him so that he can find those true balls or step out with the ball. If your non-ball playing centre half, for want of a better way of describing it, is the fella who gets the ball, say a Vidic, not that Vidic was awful on the ball, but now your Scholes or whoever, they just appear at angles 5 yards off them and just ask for the ball to be moved on to them, and they take the responsibility for playing out from that side of the field. So, like, it's very, very rare you're going to get a defender who can do everything. Like, John Egan is better on the ball than Shane Duffy, but John Egan is probably not going to give us the amount of goals that Shane has given us. Like, even the last two games, John, like, Shane Duffy has gotten the end of two set-piece deliveries in the last two games. Now, he hasn't put the ball in the back of the net on either occasion. You can see him punching the ground in frustration as much as to say to himself, you know, 2-3 months ago, that header would have flown into the back of the net for me. But he's still getting his head on the ball far, far more than anybody else. And considering we're talking about how much we struggle for goals, you know, I still think he has to be accommodated in that team. And we just need to set ourselves up to make the use of his strengths and accommodate for his weaknesses.
Okay.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say, like you mentioned there, like ball-playing centre-halves. I'll go back to when Doherty went in there, centre-half in the game, he played centre-half. I thought he looked really comfortable on the ball because he's used to playing football. And could that be an option going forward if Stephen wants to play this way? But like even Shane Keegan said there, you can have these ball-playing centre-halves, but you need people in front of you in midfield that are willing to kind of take it. Because the centre-half can only play the ball so far. Do you know, like, if you're going to play through the lines, you need your midfield players to take responsibility and do that. And again, I look, it's going to be a long process. Like, it's going to be a long process. And against, for Stephen to come in, we know we mentioned Knight there the other night. He done well in the game. I thought he played really well. But are we willing to throw Knight, like Johnny said, into a big World Cup qualifier with no experience whatsoever at that level? Would you be happy with that? Could you, Stephen? It's all about how bold Stephen is and how much belief he has in his system. And if he's kind of, for want of a word, stubborn enough to kind of consist with it, I don't know, but it's going to be interesting what happens over come the games when they come around in March. A lot will happen regarding where we are with the COVID and injuries and what have you. But there's nobody, I don't think, looking at the at this Ireland team now, there's nobody there you think, you know what, he's guaranteed to play. Whereas beforehand, you'd say Duffy was a guaranteed player. Now, we're questioning Duffy crazily. That's where we're at now with the way we're playing. So there's other players as well, like that you're kind of thinking, Hourihan, Henrik, do they stay in the team? I don't know. Have they done enough to warrant automatic choice? In my opinion, they haven't. But are we going to just put these other lads in straight to play? I thought Cullen came on and done all right, if I'm honest, as well in the other game, the other night. There's options there. But again, can you use... Is the senior international there to be used as practicing for all these bigger games? Eventually, you need to get a result. You need to find it quick. And again, it's going to be difficult, but it's possible. It's just finding that right kind of right plan of how to do it.
Clare now ahead 2-6 to 2-5 against Waterford in the hurling. We'll check in with Shane Dowling at Porky Creeve shortly. Johnny, just tell us how great Dundalk and Shane Keegan's Dundalk were last night. You were at Dalyman Park.
Shane is—he's just great. I mean, forget about Giovagnoli. What Shane has done, not only for Dundalk, for Louth, for Ireland since he came in, as you mentioned, as the opposition analyst—that's actually all he does.
Not everybody will realise you're joking there, Johnny.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they've been listening for the last 2 or 3 years, but maybe they've actually turned off. But JD, you are the psychiatrist. You're in the chair, and you are assessing this bonkers Dundalk team, and they are in the embodiment here of Shane Keegan, because I can't get my head... I think my synopsis is when Dundalk need to turn it on, they're very, very good. When they don't, and they don't necessarily need to win a game, their league form has been pants. But in the cup last night, they absolutely battered Bohemians. In the Europa League, they should 100% have gotten something against a very strong Vienna side. They could have easily gotten something against Molde. Last night, the early parts of the game... with Macmillan back, that initial ball for Duffy, Michael Duffy's performance, which prompted a tweet from their opposition analyst, Shane Keegan, today about him being tied down for Ireland. The defensive three last night, all I was thinking of was, A, I would absolutely love to get another Dundalk Rovers final in some respects with the crowd. And secondly, this makes it a lot more interesting for next season, because I think the Dundalk... I imagine, Shane, there was just a great celebration after that win last night. Giovagnoli's probably getting to know the team a bit more. And on last night's evidence, even though Bowes finished ahead of Dundalk, they won next season. Bowes are probably going to lose players. Dundalk will be a lot more able to bring players in, as much as they will lose players as well. But last night, I really enjoyed watching them. They maybe rode their luck a bit, but at times they've been unbelievable. At times they've been really, really pants. But last night, they just turned it on, and they're still a serious force when they do.
Yeah, and Rovers as well. Like, McAniff and Burke both got on the Irish squad, and confidence is up, and they both scored last night.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I didn't see as much of this game as the other lads, and all of the chat was about this was a crazy situation, because one of the worst pitches I think I've seen in the League of Ireland in years, because we've summer football, JD, and we're not usually playing games well into this time of the year. Finn Park was really, really bad. And for Shamrock Rovers to be 2-0 down against a team with massive confidence, having avoided relegation on a pitch that couldn't be less suited to the way they play, and to somehow come out of that with a win is testament to them. But talking to the lads, I mean, I don't know, Sleeves, you definitely thought the penalties were very, very questionable, and I did feel for Harps looking back at the replays.
Yeah, well, I watched the game on the League of Ireland app yesterday evening, and listen, Finn Harps got off to a flyer. They got two good goals, and like Johnny mentioned there, the conditions were a disgrace, really, for a football match. Not along the pitch, it was lashing down as well. But the penalties, for me, it was a crazy... I don't think I've ever seen anything like it before on a football pitch. I think it was three penalties given in, like, was it 4 minutes? And again, it was like the first penalty was saved, great save, and the ball comes back out, and then crosses come in, and I think it's hit. I don't know whose hand it hit, but... For me, out of all the penalties, the second one, the handball, may have been a penalty. I think the other two were very, very soft. And if I was a Finn Harps player or a Finn Harps manager, I'd be absolutely fuming with them giving against me. I think the lad's just fallen down for the first one. It's like there's a bit of a challenge in the box. It's a contact sport, but he's literally fallen down. The ref's point is... I felt like they were looking at it now. I haven't kept a massive eye on the League of Ireland this year, but looking at that and at the referee there, I felt like he couldn't wait to give the decision, and he didn't. Sometimes you say that referees, they need to give themselves a moment, to kind of analyse the situation, take a couple of seconds before they decide the referee on all occasions and his linesman just couldn't wait to give penalties to Shamrock Rovers. And again, the other two, bar the handball, I think were never a penalty. Both went through on the keeper, heavy touch going out of play. And you can see the keeper pulls his hand away and he just goes down and it's a penalty. And the fact that you very rarely see a referee give penalties that, like two penalties, like in such a quick time. But to give three was ludicrous. And I didn't hear Ollie's interview after the match, but I presume he wouldn't be very happy.
But JD, going back to your wider point, it is fantastic to have seen three League of Ireland players in the Irish squad the other night. Absolutely fantastic.
Jack came on.
Can you answer the trivia question? Who was the last player to make a competitive appearance for Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, before Jack Byrne? Who was the last player to make a competitive appearance for the Republic of Ireland before Jack Byrne? From the League of Ireland.
Was it Pat Scully?
No.
You may tell us.
Pat Byrne, 1985 for Rovers, 35 years ago.
That wasn't the that wasn't the paper plenty this week. I should have seen it. It was. Shane, it's a good point.
Before moving on to Jack and whether he was given enough time or not, it's really, really good. And they are, you know, they are two terrific players. Aaron McAniff and Graham Burke are two of the shining lights of the league, and it is brilliant to see the two of them getting called in. I know Johnny was joking about it, but obviously there was real frustration up at our place about how Stephen had looked to call Michael Duffy in, and he couldn't get called up based on paperwork that he applied for 2 years ago, still having not gone through. I can't wrap my head around that. But let's take it that Stephen thinks Michael Duffy is good enough to be in there as well. And look, Johnny will probably tell you that if Aaron McAniff is good enough to be in there, well, then I think his midfield partner, Gary O'Neill and Chris Shields up at our own place are also then good enough, because all three of those would be of a really, really similar standard in terms of being excellent ball playing centre midfielders. So that was really, really positive. And really, really good to see. Yes, there was a load of injuries and that fed into it to a certain extent. But still, look, it's a hell of a lot better place than we were where previous Irish managers didn't even acknowledge that the league existed in the country. So it's a real, real step in the right direction, in my eyes.
It's a fascinating time for the League of Ireland now, JD, because I think there's terrific, I genuinely believe there are terrific talents on the pitch. Jack Byrne, probably the main one, but so many players you could mention. But just in the context of the year that we've had, the bankruptcy of the FAI and where we're going next year, this is really, really important that we get behind football in this country. We've Brexit now coming in where young players won't be, 18-year-olds and down, won't be able to go to UK clubs as before, it would seem. So we really need to grasp this opportunity, because watching that first half last night, watching Dundalk against Shamrock Rovers earlier in the season before lockdown, there's terrific quality in this country. We need to get grounds right. We need to get academies right. We need to get the whole league right, because the troubles that the international team have had are certainly not unrelated to the fact that we've had a thoroughly dysfunctional League of Ireland for four or five decades at this stage.
We've got to check in with Shane Dowling, Waterford against Clare. A lot of goals in the first half, Shane.
John, this is some game of hurling. Clare 2-9, Waterford 2-8. Aaron Janher getting the two goals for Clare. The first one came, Clare were coming down the sideline. David McInerney made a run through the middle. No one followed his run. The ball was sprayed across to Davy Mack. Last man for Waterford came out to meet him. He popped it off the Shanahan goal. Next one came. No tactics, John. Route 1 hurling. Puck out to the centre back. The centre back launched it into the edge of the square. Shanahan rose like a salmon, turned and stuck it into the back of the net. He's got two goals and 1 point. On the other end, Dizzy Hutchinson has got two goals and 1 point. Callum Lyons is doing a man marking job on Tony Kelly. So far, Kelly's only got a point from play. He's moving freely after his injury scare. And to be honest with you, Callum Lyons is getting the better of his exchanges as well. Both free takers than either team, but Tony Kelly and Stephen Bennett, they haven't missed a free either way. So it's a really, really tight game. 7 minutes left to go in the first half. 1 point lead for Waterford.
Yeah, exciting stuff. And Galway knocking Tipperary out by 2 points earlier on. Galway to play Limerick now in the semi-finals. Kilkenny awaiting the winner of that Waterford-Clare match. Ireland getting a tonking at Twickenham. 18 points to nil. England lead 58 minutes on the watch. Breaking news. Antrim manager is off the ball's friend, Enda McGinley. He's been ratified as the Antrim senior football manager. His backroom team, Stephen O'Neill, Stephen Quinn and Sean Kelly. Just on what Johnny is saying there, Stephen Elliott, England, like Declan Rice, okay, he scored and we can make jokes about that and all that, but I don't really want to do that. Although it was interesting that he was the first player to score for England after playing football for another country in 90 years. Gordon Hodgson, who played for South Africa in 1930, scored for England and South Africa. I suppose my view is England, like, they could be real contenders for the European Championship, and you've a lot of really good young players. Phil Foden, Marcus Rashford, Bukayo Saka, Jack Grealish. That George's Park seems to be working for them, Stephen.
Yeah, you just mentioned a few names there. I think the England squad now, you wouldn't really, not that you wouldn't want to be in Gareth Southgate's shoes trying to pick a kind of starting 11, because he seems to have options all over the park. We speak about where our goals are coming from, and you can't help but have a bit of envy in you when you look at the kind of options Gareth Southgate has. There's players that haven't even been involved, the likes of Sterling, who's got goals in him as well, like Rashford. These are two players that'll probably come into the starting lineup. And you mentioned Rice, he's scoring goals from midfield now for England. Another lad that we could have seen in green, Jack Grealish, who's been outstanding in the games. He's people are talking about him as being a world-class player now, potentially. And again, some of the younger lads, Sancho, Phil Foden, scored a couple from midfield the other night. And it's, you can't help but be jealous. But yeah, there has to be a reason. There's a reason why these lads are developing. And maybe we do need to look at the kind of the English system and what they've done over the last 10, 15 years, and how they kind of developed their players and they stuck with the manager, I suppose, as well. He's come up from the 21s a little bit, similar to ourselves, and he's given you the chance. But again, it's all fine. The players that he's given the chance are players that are kind of playing in the Premier League, whereas you look at some of the players that we have in our 21s, they're good players, and compared to what we have actually in the senior squad, they're good potentially, but it's a totally different kind of level that we're talking about there. But we have to look at the English and try and learn from them and other countries as well, what they've done, because at the moment there's a system, everybody's saying there's a new system there in place, like for youth levels into the first team, and Stephen Kenny's trying to develop that. I don't totally understand that statement a little, because I think that's always been there. I think that there's always been a kind of, you play 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 21s, then you play senior international. I think that's always been there. So I don't quite get that point, but I think there must be something that they're doing that we're not doing differently. Because as again, we shouldn't be that far behind them. I don't think, you go back to like when I was a kid, even watching Ireland play, and we had so many players playing in the top kind of 3-4 teams, Man United, Liverpool, Arsenal players, and we're a million miles off that now at the minute. And something has to be changed for us to kind of get back to them levels. Because again, like we're talking, I know how great it is to have League of Ireland players coming into the senior squad, but ultimately, if we had a strong international team, then we probably wouldn't have that. Do you know what I mean? We'd have players hopefully playing in the Premier League. And again, we wouldn't have to be looking to League of Ireland to try and look for players to kind of try and change the way we're playing internationally. So I think we're a long way off, and we need to fix that somehow.
Isn't it amazing, though, the way that when a nation decides that they've got a deficiency in a particular area and they're going to focus on that particular area, that then you have the flip side of taking the concentration off maybe what you always do well. I mean, what I'm talking about there is obviously England for years would have said they didn't have enough technical, skillful players in small spaces, enough fellas who could win 1v1s, all the kind of stuff Spain were doing, let's say. And now they've got so many of them. An unbelievable collection of players who can do that. You've listed them there already, JD. I mean, it's as good as any collection of players in any country in the world at the moment. Now let's look at where they were traditionally strong. Now let's look at their centre halves. Like, they're going to do well to go and win a major tournament when they're choosing between Harry Maguire, Eric Dier, Tyrone Mings, all these kind of boys at centre half. To me, they're way off still defensively for all the.
I think Conor Cody, though, Shane Keane, you don't think Conor Cody would probably start if he had been available? I think he's one of the few that I think he can play under the
Cody. Absolutely. Conor Cody looks a good player. Is he John Terry in his prime? Is he Rio Ferdinand in his prime? Sol Campbell? Any of those kind of guys? I don't think he's anywhere near those kind of players. I just think they've really, really solved the problem in one area, and now another one has kind of appeared elsewhere.
Okay, we've got to take a break. But before we do, we've got a goal in the match between Aston Villa and Brighton in the Premier League. Tom Gale.
Aston Villa 1, Brighton 2, the hosts drawing level, and it lasting less than 10 minutes. Brighton's real first direct series into the Villa half. Ball's pulled back to the edge of the box. Solly March, right footed, brought into the side today. He's got his goal. It's Aston Villa 1, Brighton 2.
This is Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. Back after this.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk. John Duggan with you through until 5 o'clock. England 18 points, Ireland 0 in the match at Twickenham. It's not been a good afternoon for Ireland on the rugby pitch. Galway knocking Tipperary out of the hurling championship by 2 points earlier on, 3:23 to 2:24. Thank God for hurling, Shane Dowling. It's half time, Waterford Clare.
Thank God for hurling, John. You're dead right. This is some game. Waterford are leading at half time by a goal, 3:10 to 2:10. The man of the match for me so far in terms of what's going on out there is definitely Waterford's Dizzy Hutchinson. He's got 2-1 from play. But for any young lad that wants to go back and understand what the word vision means, just look at Waterford's third goal. Dizzy Hutchinson got the ball. All he had to do was tap the ball over the bar. And for all the world, what it looked like for me, he had eyes in the back of his head, just a little 10-yard flick back against the goal. Jack Fagan, the Waterford half forward, was only 6 yards out, and he was able to tap the ball into the back of the net. Some vision though from ex-professional footballer Dizzy Hutchinson. Aver Quilligan came out. It was 2010s, John, one of our own, Tommy Walsh, and he threw the hurley at Lark Orbit. Aver Quilligan tried to do the same. He picked up a yellow card for that, but that was an incredible goal, and that was definitely the moment at half time. In general, I suppose for me, Waterford are definitely working that bit harder. While they're only 3 points up in the score board, 5 out of their 6 forwards have scored from play, and also their midfielder Jamie Barron. Clare finding it very, very difficult to transition the ball from their backs to the forwards, albeit they've delivered 2 high balls, you know, a couple of high balls in around the edge of the square, where Aaron Chanahar has caught one unbelievable ball and finished it to the back of the net, and also caught another. But for me, that's only going to last for so long. He's not going to catch every single ball. And in fairness to Conor Prunty, the Waterford fullback, while it shows on the board that Aaron Chanahar's 2 goals got, he's actually not having a bad game. I suppose, listen, all the talk coming into this game was about Tony Kelly. He's only got a point from play. Outside of that, he's had very, very little possessions, and that's credit to the other Clare players, where people have been asking questions of them, and they've definitely come up trumps so far, the fact that Tony's out of the game. Coming into the second half, if I used to call it at half time, I got it wrong last week with Tipperary and Cork, where I thought Cork would push on. But to be honest with you, I would be shocked if Waterford didn't push on to win this game, solely on how hard working their forwards are, and that Clare finding it hard to get the ball into their own forward line.
Brilliant stuff, Shane Dowling, at Waterford and Clare, where Waterford have an edge at the moment. It's gone up in smoke, this 10 in a row for Celtic, it seems. Hibernian 2, Celtic 0 in the Scottish Premiership. Latest scores in the Premier League. Aston Villa 1, Brighton 2. Earlier on, Chelsea went top with a 2-0 win at Newcastle. Full-time from the Championship, Bournemouth 4, Reading 2. Latest scores, Barnsley 0, Nottingham Forest 0. Latest score, Bristol City 0, Derby 0. It's Luton Town 1, Blackburn Rovers 1. Middlesbrough 0, Norwich 1. It's Millwall 1, Cardiff City 0. Preston North End 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0. QPR 0, Watford 1. It's Stoke City 4, Huddersfield Town 3. Swansea City 1, Rotherham United 0. And Wycombe Wanderers 0, Brentford 0. Just looking at the lineups for Tottenham against Manchester City. 5:30 start in the Premier League for Spurs. Lloris. The back four, Reguilon, Alderweireld, Dyer and Aurier. Højbjerg, Son Heung-min, Moussa Sissoko, Steven Bergwijn, Tanguy Ndombele and Harry Kane. And then for City, Ederson, Kyle Walker, Ruben Diaz, Aymeric Laporte, João Cancelo, Rodrigo, Kevin De Bruyne, the captain today, Bernardo Silva, Gabriel Jesus, Ferran Torres, who had such a great burst during the week against Germany, and Riyad Mahrez. Stephen Elliott, Johnny Ward and Shane Keegan joining us to speak football until 5 o'clock. Stephen, a 2-year deal now for Guardiola there till 2023. He's desperate to win that Champions League for Manchester City. And the one person I was thinking about when I heard that news was Lionel Messi. They're going to throw the kitchen sink at getting Messi to City.
Yeah, and you'd probably, the fact that he signed that deal, you would probably guess he's been probably speaking to Lionel Messi or his representatives off or kind of behind the scenes, maybe thinking that he signed this extra 2-year deal because everybody knows he's spoken about how much he'd love to win the Champions League with City. And they're just coming up, they've come up short so far, quarter final stage for the last few years. And maybe Lionel Messi could be that finishing piece of the jigsaw. He's obviously not happy at Barcelona. There was a lot of talk of him leaving already in the summer, but he still doesn't seem happy in his body language playing for Barcelona. And the fact that Pep Guardiola has signed his 2-year deal tells me there's something happening in the pipeline. But time will tell in January. But if he does come, I'd love to see Lionel Messi come to the Premier League. I don't know about you guys. I just think to have him, to see him play and test himself. I say test himself probably isn't the right word to use, because we know how good he is. I'd just love to see him on a weekly basis playing in the Premier League, up at the kind of, because it's a different pace playing in the Premier League compared to La Liga. And would he be kind of, would he have the same effect? I know he's not as young as he used to be, but I still think it'd be a great watch week in, week out.
Well, here's an interesting one. Briefly, JD, Celtic, Duffy's actually just come on for Scott Brown for Celtic, which is interesting. So I don't know what's going on there in terms of Lionel Messi, right? Man City fans out there, if there are any in Ireland, I don't know if there are or not.
There are a good few from the old days, from the main road days, the Chiquita Banana,
there's
the
Incredible. Definitely a few City fans.
I think I know one. But in any event, if you had the option of signing Lionel Messi or Jack Grealish, would it be as straightforward as that? One is 33, Messi 34 next year, and Grealish, to me, looks like he's going to be in a sensational player. Should they be maybe focusing on getting players for the long term? Because Messi would be probably at this stage of his life a bit of a short-term fix. But I don't know. I'd love to see Grealish go to a big club, possibly on the continent. I think he's going to be an amazing prospect.
I think City could probably sign Grealish again in the future. But I just think for in the now, we're talking about in the now. In the future, we're talking about Grealish. He's at a good age. He's still learning the game, but he's doing things now week in, week out consistently, and he's definitely one of the better Premier League players at the moment. But I think Messi, that aura, having Lionel Messi in your team, the Champions League experience, winning the fact they may lift other players in the City squad, and obviously Guardiola's was manager of Barcelona when we seen the best of Lionel Messi, so we may be thinking, you know what, I can get a little bit more out of Messi. But I've watched Lionel Messi closely this year. His body language doesn't look great. People talk about him jogging around the pitch at times. Is he really trying this? And I'd never criticise Lionel Messi, but I think Pep Guardiola maybe coming to another club as well for Lionel at this later stage in his career might give him a little boost to kind of go on another level again, and we'll see him raise the game a little bit. Like, we look at Ronaldo, he's done it in so many different leagues, and maybe that's in the back of Lionel Messi's mind, thinking, you know what, people are saying Ronaldo can do it in other leagues, whereas I've kind of been in La Liga for my whole career, and I don't know what the case is. I'd love to see him come over. Me personally, if Messi's available, I know we speak about Grealish and other up-and-coming stars, I'd get Messi 100%. He's the best player ever.
No, Maradona. Hey, Maradona is. Shane Keegan has got Maradona's shirt on his wall for anybody watching on our social channels.
I do indeed, JD. I do indeed.
There it is. We can see it on the screen here for anybody watching on Periscope on Twitter or on Facebook or on YouTube at the moment, or on the OTB Sports app.
Yeah. Bit of a backstory on that one, JD. I'm gonna throw the mother under the bus, so I am. Maradona's, I had when I was 4 years of age for the 86 World Cup, and an Argentina jersey with Maradona 10 on the back of it was the first jersey that was ever purchased for me in my household. And about 5, she gave it to me as a wedding present, about 5 years ago, my mom went to one of these business charity auctions, one of these silent auctions. And as the evening transpired, she was sinking a few glasses of wine and enjoying the night and the whole lot, when the next thing that came up for grabs in this silent auction was this Maradona jersey, which, needless to say, reminded of her little boy, her 4-year-old
who
loved soccer. I'll tell you the truth. I'm afraid to ask her how much she paid for it, because she just said she made sure she wasn't going to lose out in that silent auction. I dread to think how much she shelled out for that jersey, to be honest.
That's great stuff. Shane Keegan, the Maradona story. It looks fantastic, that jersey that you have. Stephen Elliott, do you have any kind of great jerseys, or any shirts you swapped, or even from the games that you were involved in yourself that you really treasure?
I wasn't a massive player for swapping shorts, if I'm honest. I swapped a few times in my career, but because I was a Liverpool fan growing up, I grew up a big Liverpool fan, and I always said when I played against Liverpool, if I could get a Liverpool strip of either Jamie Carragher or Steven Gerrard, they were the only two people that I would have been actually bothered about getting, because obviously knowing their kind of status at the club. So I managed to get Jamie Carragher's when we played them at Anfield one time, and that's probably the one I probably most cherish. Not that I cherish like other people's jerseys that much, but I have Jamie Carragher's strip, and he's probably, because again, he's probably the biggest player I've ever played against, but just obviously for my reason, being a Liverpool fan, I was delighted to get hold of that.
Johnny, have you got anything that you really treasure, one jersey over any other? So you have a lot of jerseys.
No, but I had this debate with Shane before because we both have Maradona stories, and I thought mine was great, but it turns out it was relatively absolutely crap compared to Shane's because I was back in the day. I mean, I came from a West of Ireland family. It sounds like we were kind of impoverished, like it was, you know, the expat sending money home or whatever, but we had cousins in England who would send like clothes. My dad's cousin Bobby Ward would send clothes because his kids were a little bit older than ours, so he'd send clothes like that wouldn't fit them anymore, and one of them was this really, really crude O'Neill's made Argentina jersey with Maradona 10 on the back. And sure, I was like, I don't know, I was only a kid. I thought it was legit. And I remember scoring 3 goals in the backyard in Winfield National School that day, and I never scored. And I put it all down to Maradona. I actually told this story in Off the Ball, I think, whenever I told it anyway. And then Shane came up with his story, and it just sounded absolutely crap, to be honest.
I think that's a good story, Johnny.
Yeah. But you know, And now O'Neill's have come full circle, and they're doing Galway United's jerseys next season. So there you are. But it was, I know we mentioned him, but it was sad to see that he had that major health scare as well, JD, because yeah, as much as he was deeply flawed, and you know, a lot of us have seen the movie and so forth, he got into a situation, I suppose, in his life that probably led him down a bad path. And we should never forget his absolute genius, you know. And for many, is maybe yourself, still the best of the best of the best.
Absolutely. England 18, Ireland 7. Jacob Stockdale off the bench and has scored a try for Ireland in that match at Twickenham, but we're going to lose. How are we calling it, Stephen Elliott and the lads? Half five, Pep versus Jose year and a day in the job. And if you actually looked at the table since he took over, Spurs would be third. I read out the teams. How'd you see it going?
Yeah, I was just the fact that Matt Doherty was out. You know, I just dread seeing Aurier's name on a team sheet. I really, really do, to be honest with you. Now, look, the only plus looking at the team sheet is that Raheem Sterling isn't there. I think he's got a bit of a strain, and maybe that's what's stopping him starting. But I was just looking at Raheem Sterling up against Aurier, and I'll tell you, to me, that's odds on for at least one penalty all day long. Hopefully we mightn't be in quite as much danger with him not there. I'd give us a bit more of a chance now. I'll tell you, JD, I don't know if you've seen much of his, but I think Højbjerg has been a quiet revolution for us. I think he's been absolutely fantastic, and he gives us that steel that we haven't had in years. And when he's on the pitch, it always makes me kind of a little bit more kind of comfortable. But I'm still, even without Aurier there, I'm a bit worried about Eric Dier. I don't know.
Well, the stats always change all the time about passes, but Højbjerg has had more passes was recently than anybody else in the Premier League.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. He is excellent. His knowledge of the game, his positional sense, he can do both sides of the game brilliantly. He'll get on the ball and get you ticking, but he'll always be where you want him from a defensive point of view as well, you know?
I think that game, I do think JD, and it'd be just lovely if the three of us, and even Sleeves could do it virtually, if the three of us could just go for a post-show beer and watch this game like in the old days, because this is going to be fascinating. It's like Mourinho against Pep. One lad who's definitely, I think, on the wane as a coach, or certainly his question to answer in Pep. Mourinho, maybe the fire still burns. Are Spurs contenders? I think it's going to be a massive game, and I think they're taking on a City side that's still pretty vulnerable.
I look at the benches. I think they could play a big part, because I think both teams are going to have a look at each other. Listen, even in the starting 11 for both teams, some top quality there. You just have to look at Spurs, Son and Kane. They've been great together all season, linking up. And I just look at City's bench there. Like, they've got Aguero back on the bench. They've got Phil Foden, a couple of goals midweek, and he always seems to do something when he comes off the bench. Raheem Sterling, we all know what he's about with his pace and directness. I think the bench might have something to say about it. Gareth Bale, he hasn't quite got to the levels that, I'm not saying he's going to get to the levels he was at previous when he was at Spurs, but he hasn't quite done as much as what I expected him to do. I know he came on and scored a couple of weeks ago, but again, the bench could have a lot to say. I think starting 11-wise, you'd look at the Spurs attacking lineup. Harry Kane and Son, for me, are two of the best informed players around in the Premier League, and they can cause problems for anybody. But it'll be an interesting watch, no doubt. The two managers will tactically be set up, and it'll be, I don't see it being loads of goals in the game, but again, I think it might be one of them where they have a look at each other, and then the changes later on in the game may affect it.
I was actually just looking yesterday for about 10 minutes at a picture I took of a pint.
10 minutes.
last
year. Even the picture had gone stale at that stage.
After the All-Ireland final. I was thinking of tweeting it out and just going pints with a question mark and a sad face, but I didn't do it. So
what do you mean? What do you miss, though, JD? Do you miss like going to
I miss the spontaneity of walking into a pub and not seeing where, or just meeting a mate for, you know, the way you meet a mate for a pint and then you don't know where you sometimes you end up. Or if you go to a match and then you, like, you go to a match.
Yeah, and you, like, you miss.
Yeah, as a Spurs fan, JD, we Dundalk have Arsenal in the Aviva Stadium on the 10th of December, the day of my birthday. If I cannot get a pint after that game, I swear to God, I'll lose it.
Over to you, Irish government, and effort.
Yeah, it'll only cost you €9 for your meal. Just on Liverpool, Leicester tomorrow, lads. Brendan Rodgers is going to be loving this. Like top of the league, not too many serious injuries, but Fofana is a doubt. But Vardy on the break, like Liverpool without Van Dijk, Alexander Arnold, Gomez, Salah. Stephen, are Liverpool vulnerable?
Of course. You look at all the injuries they have, it's going to affect them massively. Again, you look at Leicester, the way they're playing, they look really good going forward. Direct pacey, and Jamie Vardy, you've got a player who's banging form. And they're definitely vulnerable, Liverpool, but there's no Salah either. I think that's a big one for Liverpool. Whether Liverpool are playing great, Salah always can kind of pop up for a moment. The magic, as we've seen, even in the Merseyside derby. And yeah, it's going to be a tough game. And Liverpool are going to have to kind of see out the next kind of few weeks up until on the window kind of opens up again and see, can they kind of get through it, kind of to stay in and around the kind of top of the table. Because I think Klopp has already mentioned that he will look to strengthen in January. And it's going to be interesting. Liverpool, everybody spoke last year about Liverpool saying, yeah, what, if they pick up a few injuries, will they be as strong? And now that question will be answered over the next while, because they have got injuries, and injuries to players that really were a big part of winning the Premier League last year.
That's the thing, though. They still, like, for all of the bad luck they've had, not quite up there with Ireland, but for all of the bad luck they've had, they still have, and this back four will never play together before tomorrow, regardless of what they play. This is a serious team, and Thiago potentially back is probably definitely going to negate some of those losses in terms of Salah and defensively. I think who he plays right back is going to be interesting, JD, because I think Leicester would definitely expose Milner or seek to expose him if he were playing right back. But Thiago coming back will be huge. And as much as Salah's been brilliant this season, Jota's been excellent as well. And I think it's set to be a really, really cracking game, I have to say.
It seems like Ireland have been hammered 18-7 in the rugby by England at Twickenham. So it was a strange result, but I think England have been completely dominant in that. Lads, we got to leave it there. Shane Keegan, Johnny Ward and Stephen Elliott, love the pleasure of your company this afternoon. And we will have a socially distant pint before Christmas, even if we can't have a normal one. But I'm surely there'll be some way of us being able to have some kind of responsible drink before Christmas. But we'll leave that.
We certainly won't be looking at it for 10 minutes anyway.
No, well, maybe the first one, but maybe the ones after that might be a little bit quicker. Lads, thanks so much.
Cheers, John.
All right, the lads there on OTB Football Saturday. Just to give you some scores. Just to wrap up the day from the Premier League and from the Championship, before we go to Shane Dowling. Full-time, Newcastle 0, Chelsea 2. So Chelsea top of the table. Aston Villa 1, Brighton 2 as the latest score. Spurs, as we say, playing Manchester City at 5:30. Manchester United taking on West Brom at 8 o'clock. In the Championship, full-time, Bournemouth 4, Reading 2. That was a full-time score from earlier on. And also, we got a lot of other matches in the Championship as well. We're going to go through them now. Yeah, just into the closing stages. Barnsley 2, Nottingham Forest 0. Bristol City 1, Derby County 0. Luton Town 1, Blackburn Rovers 1. Middlesbrough 0, Norwich City 1. Millwall 1, Cardiff City 1. It's Preston North End 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0. QPR 1, Watford 1. Stoke City 4, Huddersfield Town 3. Swansea City 1, Rotherham United 0. And Wycombe Wanderers 0, Brentford 0. So those are the scores from the Championship. Celtic have come back to draw against Hibs. Hibernian 2, Celtic 2. Edouard with a penalty, and then Laxalt with a goal in the 91st minute for Celtic. So Blush is saved there for Celtic. Shane Dowling, Waterford Clare, tell us what's happening.
Before I tell you what's happening, John, if you're going for a socially distant pint, you have my number, so don't forget me, because I'll be gasping as well. Anyway, more important business here in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Waterford are 3-12, Clare 2-11, a 4-point game. There's been one change on both sides. Number 24 for Waterford, Neil Montgomery, he has come on for Jack Prendergast, and he made his introduction on very early in the second half, where he intercepted a short Clare puck out, ran through the heart of the defence and put it over the bar. And also Dave Fitzgerald, he has come on to Clare panel as well. So listen, I suppose you know, looking at it, John, I just think Waterford, they're, as I said there at half time, you know, the Clare defence are really struggling to get the ball out of their defence. They're being turned over by Waterford time and time again. Waterford seems to be working a lot harder, and you know, it's only early days, there's still a long way to go, but I just think Waterford are working a bit harder, and you know, that's where it's at. You know, to go back to Tony Kelly, he had a 65 his first chance of the second half. He hit it wide, a poor wide by his standards, but straight after that he did get a point from play, but he's been harassed by four Waterford players as he got it away, so he's been very, very tightly marked. But listen, there's a long way to go, a half an hour left, and all things are to play for here in the All-Ireland quarter-final.
Okay, Shane Dowling, thanks so much for today. Galway beating Tipperary earlier on by 3:23 to 2:24. Galway through to meet Limerick. Tipperary gone from the championship. Don't forget Off the Ball Sunday tomorrow. Joe Molloy presenting from 1, bringing you live and exclusive commentary of the Premier League game involving Leeds United and Arsenal from Elland Road, with Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr calling the shots. Johnny Mercia and Bernard Jackman will join us for the Sunday paper review, and we'll be across the two GA provincial football finals. So Valerie Mulcahy will keep us up to date on the Munster football final between Cork and Tipperary, and Mickey Quinn is at the Athletic Grounds for the battle between Cavan and Donegal. If you missed any of our football chat with Stephen Elliott, Shane Keegan and Johnny Ward, you can find the podcast of it on the OTB Sports app. Search OTB Sports in your app store now to download it for iOS and Android, or check out the content wherever you get your pods. Thanks so much for listening today. Speak soon. Bye-bye.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Gamble responsibly. See Dunluey.net.